Coming up, California's debate over legalizing marijuana. Is it a gateway drug? Also, as the Pope canonizes six new saints, Australia goes all out celebrating the inclusion of one of its own, Mary MacKillop. There's even a musical about her life.
God can make us very happy.
And veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan on a healing pilgrimage at Washington's National Cathedral.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome. I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Pope Benedict XVI named 24 new cardinals this week, increasing the number of men who will be eligible to vote for the next pope. The list includes two Americans, Archbishop Raymond Burke, the former Archbishop of St. Louis, now head of the Vatican's highest court, and the other, Archbishop Donald Wuerl of Washington, D.C. Benedict also increased the percentage of Italians in the College of Cardinals, as well as the number who come from the Vatican's bureaucracy. The new cardinals will receive their traditional red hats at a ceremony in Rome on November 20th. We get analysis of the new list from Father Thomas Rees, a senior fellow at Georgetown University's Woodstock Theological Center and an authority on the Curia, the Vatican bureaucracy. Tom, welcome.
Thank you.
What do you see? What's the message in this list?
Well, I think there's two. One is continuity and one is change. The continuity is the fact that we see Pope Benedict appointing people who basically reflect his views on church issues and where the church ought to go. So when they get together to elect a new pope, there's not going to be radical change. We're going to see continuity with the papacy of Benedict. What change we do see, however, is that with John Paul, we saw a reduction of the role of the Italians in the College of Cardinals and also of Vatican Curia cardinals. Pope Benedict is reversing that. We're seeing more Italians, and we're seeing like half of the people appointed as cardinals were from the Vatican Curia.
And what are people around the world, in the Third World especially, Latin America, Africa, other places, what do they think of that?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. Two-thirds of Catholics live in the Global South, but they only get one-third of the cardinals. Two-thirds of the cardinals are in the Global North, where one-third of the Catholics live. The Catholic Church is not a one-man, one-vote operation.
No, no. And what about in the U.S.? What do you make of the appointments here?
Well, they were not a surprise. We knew that Archbishop Burke, because he's head of the Supreme Court of the Church, would be made a cardinal. We also knew that Archbishop Wuerl would be made a cardinal.
But the New York Archbishop was not made a cardinal.
No. And the reason was his predecessor, Cardinal Egan, is still under 80 years of age, and he will be until April of 2012. After that, Archbishop Dolan is going to become a cardinal.
For sure.
For sure.
Father Tom Rees, many thanks.
Thank you.
A new study of the country's largest charities shows that donations were down overall in 2009. According to the Chronicle of Philanthropy, charitable giving decreased across the board by 11%. Several religious charities rank among the country's largest, including the Salvation Army. Donations there fell by about 8%. Other religious groups, however, including Catholic Charities and Feed the Children, actually had an increase in contributions. Meanwhile, another survey shows that most women donate more to charity than men. Researchers at Indiana University say women are not only more likely to give, but they also give larger amounts. They say women have become more generous as the number who work and have college degrees has increased. Crystal Cathedral, the megachurch in California, has filed for bankruptcy. Officials blame the bad economy and a decrease in giving, but they say the church's ministries and popular television broadcast Hour of Power will continue. On November 2nd, voters in Arizona and South Dakota decide whether to legalize marijuana for medical use, as 14 states and the District of Columbia already have. Meanwhile, in California, where medical marijuana is legal, voters are deciding whether to decriminalize recreational marijuana use. Is marijuana a gateway to harder drugs? Lucky Severson reports from Los Angeles.
It is because Satan has tried to make us think and have tried to make us believe that it's nothing. Yeah. Isn't that just like the truth of the enemy? Yeah. That it is less harmful than alcohol. Isn't that how Satan comes in the back door to make you think that one sin is greater than another?
It's Sunday, so Bishop Ron Allen is guest preaching in a church. Any other day of the week, and he'll be preaching the same message to anyone who will listen. Bishop Allen is president of the International Faith-Based Coalition, comprising what he says are over 4,000 churches nationwide. His one mission is to teach drug prevention to church leaders, and more urgently, to defeat Proposition 19, which would legalize marijuana in California.
First, it decriminalizes low-level possession of marijuana of up to an ounce by adults 21 and over, eliminates all penalties for that offense, and allows adults 21 and over to cultivate small amounts of marijuana also for their personal use. And then the second thing that it does is it allows local governments to decide for themselves whether to regulate and tax sales of marijuana also for adults 21 and over, if they choose to do so.
Stephen Gutwillig is a California director of the Drug Policy Alliance, a nationwide organization working to change the focus of the war on drugs, especially state and federal laws prohibiting marijuana.
Banning marijuana outright has fueled this enormous black market. It wastes hundreds of millions of dollars of law enforcement resources. It makes criminals of millions of otherwise law-abiding citizens. That makes it very, very clear that marijuana prohibition has failed at every single level.
And today, we are in a critical position in the state of California.
Yes, sir.
We have individuals that want to legalize a Schedule I drug, marijuana. And what they're saying to us is that it's not dangerous. I beseech you, don't sit at home November the 2nd. Go down to the polls and vote.
In 14 states in the District of Columbia, medical marijuana is now legal and available in approved outlets like this. Other states are considering it. But at the same time as arrests for every category of crime have gone down nationwide, recreational marijuana busts are skyrocketing. The FBI says police prosecuted 858,000 individuals for marijuana violations in 2009, and almost 9 out of 10 of those were for possession of an ounce or less. Most arrests are misdemeanors, but still result in a permanent drug arrest record.
Every independent body that has been asked to look particularly at what should be done with marijuana, the answer has always been, we should probably regulate it the way we do alcohol and tobacco, both because it's widely available and widely consumed and is going to lead to mass arrests. That's why alcohol prohibition itself was a disaster in the 1920s and 30s, and why it's regulated today. Not because it's harmless, but because the risks associated with it are only magnified with a prohibition that drives its consumption underground.
When we talk about prohibition of the 1920s and 1930s, we cannot relate that to what we're dealing with today at all.
Allen says legalizing marijuana would simply add to the destruction drugs and alcohol have already caused in African-American neighborhoods.
Here's their mantra. Marijuana is as harmless as alcohol. And so what I've been offering them is a rattlesnake or a cobra. Which one is harmless?
Joining Bishop Allen's coalition are conservative church leaders, the state's two Democratic senators, Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer, Republican Senate candidate Carly Fiorina. outgoing Governor Schwarzenegger, and the two candidates who want his job, Jerry Brown and Meg Whitman.
I am firmly opposed to Proposition 19, which is the legalization of marijuana. But don't ask me, ask law enforcement. Every single law enforcement official in this entire state is against Proposition 19.
Not every single law enforcement officer opposes Prop 19. Several former police chiefs and the National Black Police Association support it. So does the California Council of Churches and the California NAACP, where Alice Huffman is president.
I would like to see it approved across the country. I believe prohibition has failed us, and it is failing us now.
I have called constantly for the resignation of Alice Huffman as the state president of NAACP for this one reason. If you want to be a civil rights leader, you have to understand this one thing. What causes the devastation in the color community? It's not rocket science, Lucky. We all know it's drugs.
Marijuana should be a different classification of a drug. It should not lead to any criminal arrests. It should not destroy our families.
There's another reason the California NAACP supports Prop 19, and it was underscored in a recent study of marijuana possession arrests in California.
Statewide, African Americans are arrested at more than triple the rate of whites. Typically double, triple, quadruple in all of the 25 major counties.
According to the study, if, as a case in point, you lived here in South Central Los Angeles and you were African American, you were seven times more likely to be arrested and cited for possessing marijuana than if you were white. The gap may be even greater because studies have shown that blacks are less likely to use pot than whites. Bishop Allen says the disparity in part is because the police discover marijuana possession while they are in African-American communities investigating other crimes.
If we can do something about the drug abuse and the crime in these neighborhoods, then maybe the police officers won't get the call to go and arrest in that particular area.
One law enforcement person said, yeah, we call your community the pond. We go down to the pond. That's where we go, I guess, fishing is what he was implying. And that's exactly what happens. It's that they target our communities.
National studies indicate that enforcing marijuana laws cost American taxpayers over $8 billion annually. The cost of pot arrests in California are estimated at over $1 billion a year.
Police will always deny that there are such a thing as arrest and ticket quotas, but clearly these exist. Arresting, detaining, citing petty marijuana possession offenders are among the safest and easiest ways to meet those quotas.
The greatest fear of opponents to Prop 19 is that marijuana is a so-called gateway drug, that smoking it will lead to other, stronger drugs like crack cocaine and heroin.
They've said to me that it's not a gateway drug. I have to disagree with them. I can only talk about Bishop Ron Allen. When I started my 7 years of crack cocaine, my first experience with drugs was marijuana.
The overwhelming evidence shows that the enormous majority of people who try marijuana or who even smoke marijuana regularly never consume any other illicit substance. It's actually what's referred to as a terminus drug. It is the only illicit substance that most people ever try.
Governor Schwarzenegger recently signed a law reducing the fine for marijuana possession to that of an infraction, like a traffic violation. But Alice Huffman says it won't do anything about the disparity of arrests, and it won't stop gangs from running illegal drugs in black neighborhoods.
I thought that the war on drugs was going to protect us. I did not realize that the war on drugs was going to destroy my families and destroy my community. And so I am very passionate now that I understand. And I think that this is a great opportunity to raise the awareness in America about a failed drug policy.
Even if California voters approve Prop 19, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder says the government will continue to enforce federal marijuana laws. But without the help of state and local police, that wouldn't be easy, because they're the ones who make virtually all marijuana arrests, nationwide and in California. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Los Angeles.
The latest Los Angeles Times USC poll shows the marijuana proposition trailing among likely voters, 51% to 39%. In other news, thousands from around the world met in Cape Town, South Africa this week for what organizers say was the most diverse gathering of Christians ever. The event is known as the Lausanne Congress on World Evangelization. Delegates discussed such topics as faith, poverty, and disease prevention. There was controversy as well after the Chinese government refused to allow some 200 Chinese Christians to attend. Chinese officials said they were not legal representatives of China's Christian community. At Emory University in Atlanta, a prestigious group of religious leaders gathered for an interfaith summit on happiness. The panelists included Catherine Jefferts Shorey, presiding bishop of the U.S. Episcopal Church, British Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, Islamic scholar Sayyid Hossein Nasser, and the Dalai Lama. They agreed that true contentment does not come from material possessions. Last Sunday in Rome, Pope Benedict XVI named six people saints, two men and four women. Among the crowd were 8,000 Australians, there to honor one of those canonized, a 19th century Australian woman, Mary MacKillop, who devoted her life to educating children in Australia's vast outback. Blessed Mother Mary MacKillop is her country's first saint. It's not every day that an Australian becomes a saint and draws world attention, so Australia has been celebrating enthusiastically. There's even a sold-out musical of Mary MacKillop's life, which included a brief excommunication because she upset the local bishops. Our reporter is Stuart Cohen in Sydney.
And we declare her excommunicated!
It is done!
Mary MacKillop, the musical, was 10 years in the making, the creation of a part-time composer in the city of Melbourne. The effort to bring it to the stage accelerated 2 years ago as the likelihood of her canonization drew closer. Director Anthony McCarthy says Mary MacKillop's life was well-suited to be made into a musical.
There's some quite dramatic liturgical, ecclesiastical moments in her life. She gets excommunicated, she gets forgiven, she has to go to the Pope, she meets the Pope, she comes back.
Mary MacKillop was born to Scottish immigrant parents in 1842. She became a nun at 25 and dedicated her life to educating children throughout Australia's isolated rural areas. She co-founded the country's first religious order, the Sisters of St. Joseph, and opened dozens of schools across the country's vast outback. In 1871, she was excommunicated, in part for exposing a pedophile priest. She was reinstated just 5 months later, and by the time she died in 1909 at age 67, her order had 750 nuns who were running 117 schools around the country.
I actually think that the production is serving a great historical purpose for the Catholic community and as well as the community at large.
The members of the cast of more than 80 are all volunteers, with one exception. Mary herself, played by professional opera singer Joanna Cole. For her, it's the culmination of a lifetime of association with Mary MacKillop's Josephite order.
I was educated by the nuns from kindergarten right through to high school. I really like to portray Australian women and Australian heroines, and I think she's a very special heroine for Australia to look at, a very special role model.
Australians aren't known for being an especially devout people, but when an Aussie is recognized on the world stage, the entire country celebrates. In addition to the musical, there's a new postage stamp bearing a picture of MacKillop, and a light display on Sydney's famous Harbour Bridge with images of Mary and some of her quotes.
She was a visionary and a pioneer, and I think her story should be told from that point of view, and I think we should be very proud of the fact that this fabulous woman was born here in Australia and had such an effect on us.
The Australian government has even taken the unusual step of copywriting Mary MacKillop's name and image to protect the memory of the country's new national hero from over-commercialization. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Stuart Cohen in Sydney.
We have a special story today about veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan under care at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, and also, in a sense, pilgrims. About once a month, Army Chaplain Randy Haycock takes those he calls warriors to the Washington National Cathedral to pray and remember, and the chaplain hopes learn to live a little better with the losses they endured.
And certainly the idea of pilgrimage is common to many faith traditions, as well as just a human experience. Part of the pilgrimage experience and a lot of what we do at Walter Reed is to help people again reconnect with what it means to be a safe, whole, healthy human being.
Just relax and try and be in the present moment, okay?
One of the questions that a lot of warriors have when they come to Walter Reed is, what's my life for? They're looking for a sense of purpose and meaning. And that's sort of the idea behind the life journey exercise at the beginning, is to just get them to stop and reflect a little bit about their life. It's become for me a kind of metaphor for life itself, that really we're all on journeys, and learning how to deal with things like loss and the horror of engaging in war.
Many warriors tell me that they sometimes feel guilty, that their friend had died and they hadn't.
I think that's part of what's in a pilgrim's heart. There's this kind of longing for more in life. And the idea of being on a journey with someone else is something that people get well in military life, because your life depends on the people around you. You gotta know people have your back. The War Memorial Chapel, where they have the opportunity to talk about how their own journey intersected with the journey of their friend, and basically just to do some grief work. And telling the story is an important part of healing in cases of post-traumatic stress disorder.
It was like losing a brother, losing, you know, a family member. And that's just always kind of haunted me.
Thousands of people have come into that little piece of geography to remember their war dead. So I think there is a kind of energy field here that, you know, I could come and just bring soldiers into that space and say blah, 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 and something would still happen. Simply because of the prayers and tears and, you know, heartfelt emotions that others have let loose in that place. The next step is to gather around the high altar, and then using that Clapton song, there couldn't be a better song written for warriors, because many of them feel like, what's the sense of going on? Concluding the way the Army ordinarily does with coming to attention, calling off their names, sounding taps, helps them to make a letting go of their friend so that they can get on with the rest of their life.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. There's much more on our website. You can comment on all of our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And now you can watch Religion and Ethics News Weekly anytime, anywhere, on smartphones, iPhones, and iPads. Our new app offers all of our news headlines, story videos, program audio, and our multi-faith calendar, too. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, scenes from eastern India, where Buddhist monks released lanterns that rose into the sky. The monks wanted to raise awareness of the need for more renewable energy.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Be more. PBS.